Bubble Media.
This is Inside a Bubble. I am Bisi Adedun. Today's show is all about secrets, specifically about the secrets people keep from their parents and why. It's all kinds of things from their sexual activity to their personal identity. Before we get started, we have to say right now, this episode will feature some instances of strong language and a story about sexual abuse. So maybe don't listen to this one with children around. And take care. Here's the first story.
When I saw your tweet about keeping secrets from parents and living, having a secret life, right? The first thing that came to mind was, okay, that's me. Because all I've done is live a life that I know would not be acceptable to my parents, but somehow I still managed to keep the impression going that I'm a good daughter.
So starting with a story about someone we are going to call Mary, that's not her real name. Mary's secret from her parents is that she has an entire second life. She lives with them, but as is often the case when you live with your parents as an adult, she has different values from the ones they do. For one, sex.
Sometimes I feel like it's not like I'm even doing a bad thing necessarily. I mean, it's not like I'm a sex worker. I say that because as much as we say that, you know, it's okay if that is what you do, but most parents, most traditional parents, like my parents, would have none of that. Okay, so I tell myself, it's not like I'm a sex worker. I'm just having sex with people I feel like I like, and that should be normal. Sex should be normal.
But it's not, because Mary's parents are Christian, Jehovah's Witness actually, and as you know, in Christianity, sex outside marriage is a sin. She can't exactly have casual conversations about how she sins, and it doesn't really matter if she believes differently. Her sex life is one she has to keep away from her parents.
I feel like if my parents know for sure that I'm having as much sex as I'm having, they would literally die.
Maybe sex is generally a secret everyone keeps. People don't like to talk about it, so maybe that's not so unique to Mary. Something that is perhaps unique to her is this.
I mentioned earlier that I'm from a family of Jehovah's Witnesses, right? Good. So, it's usually what meant to watch our association.
Watch the kind of friends you keep?
Not being a Jehovah's Witness automatically makes you a bad friendship material.
Ergo, if you aren't Jehovah's Witness, she can't be friends with you. Well, at least that's the way her family makes it out to be.
It's not like I have friends who are terrorists or armed robbers, or, you know, I have nice friends, but the single fact that they are not Jehovah's Witnesses would make them unsuitable. Sounds crazy, but it is what it is. I mean, it's okay to know people or talk to people. You cannot avoid knowing non-witnesses as witnesses, right? But then to make them to be so close, like having close associates that are not Jehovah's Witnesses to the extent that they come over, they share meals with you, you go out together, it's a no-no.
As a result, Mary tends to keep her friendships outside her house. People don't visit her often just so she can protect them from the awkwardness, protect them from the hostility. There was one instance where a friend of hers was visiting the city and needed a place to stay and thought, oh, I can stay with Mary. Mary had known this friend for years. They went to school together. When Mary's mom died, this friend was with her every step of the way, followed the family to the village for the burial. This wasn't some random person. This was a friend her dad knew. But when the friend came over...
But then she came over for a weekend and my dad was like, this person does not share your beliefs, do not have the same values as you, as a servant of Jehovah, and so you shouldn't be so close to her because she can make you do stuff you do not want to do, and...
Stuff like sex, in which case, it's already too late. That's where we're starting today's episode. an episode about the secrets people keep from parents. I am Bisi Adedun, and you're listening to Inside the Bubble, the crowdsourced podcast about social bubbles. Every episode, we feature stories from different people about their experiences around the unifying concept. We do this to show how different or similar life outside our bubble is. For the first act, we are doing stories about people in university. It's stories about things not going according to plan and people figuring it out without the help of their parents. Act 1. My parents never found out about my carryovers. Alright, this story goes back to 2015, to a policy implemented by the University of Lagos. A policy that affected hundreds of students and gave them automatic carryovers without them ever writing the exams. Two of those affected students currently work on this podcast, associate producers Itoro and Ayotunde. What this last semester meant for Itoro was a complete change in the trajectory of his life. Change of course of study from engineering to actuarial science, essentially putting him on the business path he currently finds himself. For Ayotunde, this semester meant she was going to spend the rest of her university year trying to somehow make up for it, and she was going to do this without ever telling her parents. Here's her story.
So I never told my family this story because I have a serious problem. So the year was 2015 and I was my first year studying law in University of Lagos. I had recently returned to school for the second semester of the session. Now it's supposed to be mandatory to submit your course forms in the middle of each semester. But even though it was mandatory, not a lot of people did that. However, I was still in my first year and I was still extremely eager, so I had every intention of submitting my course form. About a month and a half, maybe even 2 months had passed before I even remembered that I hadn't submitted my course form. This was maybe 6-7 weeks to exams and I was like, enough is enough, I need to submit this thing. On getting to the cyber cafe and getting to a computer operator, trying to log into my portal, I received what was at the time the single greatest shock of my life. I didn't see any course that the computer operator had sworn she had imputed and saved. I didn't see anything. All the courses that I was seeing were courses I had registered for first semester. I was dazed for a couple of minutes before it eventually dawned on me that I was fucked. And thus began the longest month of my life, going from one office to the other, trying to resolve the unbelievable situation I had found myself in. That was the first time I was confronted with the callousness of the system I had become a part of. I met a lot of people that month, people like me who had thought they had registered, others who had neglected to for a number of reasons. I met someone who had lost their mother and as a result was unable to raise the money for her fees until much later. I'm not even sure how this happened, but they were still barred from completing the course registration. But I remember this particular man talking to this girl who had lost her mother. She was trying to explain that she lost her mom and she brought out things to verify that she lost her mom. And the man said so. He was like, go back home, go and mourn her properly. When you finish mourning her, come back and register for the new semester. So of course, that was the moment I officially gave up. I told myself enough is enough. I am not putting myself through this. Like, it doesn't make any sense to even attempt to try to reason with any of these people. So I gave up. I deferred my courses for that semester and pretended I was studying hard whenever my parents called or texted me. I didn't do any exams that semester. That semester essentially never happened. All the classes that I went for, it was like all of that was for nothing. I had stressed myself and put myself through shit and through a whole semester without actually having anything to show for it. Before I went back home, I sat down and I made a timetable for the next 4 years I was going to spend in that institution. I planned the extra courses I was going to do every first semester, which was going to free up space each year to take on the 7 courses I hadn't done in my first year. I was a nervous wreck every second semester, knowing the huge load I was taking. And it wasn't even that my current courses or the courses I was doing from year one were as hard as my law courses. They weren't. It was just the impossibility of the scheduling. I missed tests and assignments because the first year clashes kept clashing with my actual classes. One particular year, I remember having 3 exams on a day that my classmates had only one, all on different parts of campus, with less than 30 minutes break to sprint from one end of campus to the other. I had to make sure I finished each paper early, regardless of when I got in for the paper, because I would have to dash to another part of campus for the next exam. By my final year, I had 2 outstanding courses from year one. I wrote them. I didn't tell my family for a number of reasons. I knew they would be mad, I knew they would be disappointed, and I also knew that telling them wasn't going to amount to anything productive. They would have gotten angry and yelled and blamed me, and honestly, nobody could blame me more than I already did. No one could berate me more than I already did, so there was no point. So that's really the reason why I didn't tell them. Just, I knew they would have been upset and I knew they would have been mad, but I didn't need their upset. It's like, I didn't need it. I didn't require it. It wasn't going to be useful in my life. Their anger could not help me, because people who had been hospitalized and had severe issues were ignored by the institution. So there was no point getting them involved, because there was just nothing they could have done.
Today's episode is about secrets people keep from their parents and why.
Hey, it's Moe. So, here to speak to you for a quick second to ask for a favor. The favor is for you to tweet at us or about us at the Pod of Bubbles. Tell me something about this episode, something you thought about while listening to it, something you agree or disagree with. And please share this with a friend, just one friend. This means a lot to us and it's the most encouraging thing you can do to keep us going. Alright, back to the show.
Inside the Bubble, I am Bisi Adedun. Today's episode is about the secrets people keep from their parents and why. This is the second act. Act 2, One Last Secret. This story is about Precious.
Should I be using my real name? I don't know.
I mean, if you're comfortable with it.
Precious is not her real name.
I live in England.
Before that,
I've lived in America and I've lived in Nigeria as well.
Growing up in Nigeria and then living in America, Precious did a lot of things that her parents never found out about. Her escapades are actually what inspired this entire episode of Secrets. She was, in her own words, the black sheep. The story starts in Nigeria, where she lived in just about every city one could live in.
So I've lived in Kano, lived in Jos, lived in Abuja, lived in Port Harcourt, Lagos, Calabar, Enugu. Bonny, but that's in River State. I don't know if that counts, but Bonny. Like 9.
Yeah, that's a lot of. Okay, you need to tell us why.
We are drug dealers and we're on the run. No, don't put that.
There are actually 2 reasons why she lived in so many places. Her mom's career as a politician meant she moved around a lot. And secondly, her mom and dad weren't together, which meant she shuttled between both parents.
And then there was a point which was it was actually really weird.
they lived walking distance from each other. And I was not used to that. It was very weird, but it was nice because I would just, my mom pisses me off, I would just go to my dad's house.
So as a child with busy parents, Precious lived a life freer than most other children.
One day, you and your friends were supposed to go to Bible study, and you did not do that.
Oh my goodness. That day, right? So, we're supposed to go to a scripture reunion meeting. So we left the house with the clothes we were planning to change into in our bags. So we left the house and then went to a restaurant and went to the bathroom. One of us had to stay outside to pretend like she was buying something. So we went into the bathroom and then changed and then came out and then went to the cinema. The problem was we didn't have money to get a taxi and we had to walk back past my house to get to the cinema. So this is us like going past my house, but we now have to like bend behind like cars. And then my heart is beating just thinking about it. My mom comes back home.
Why are you guys sneaking past the house?
Yes. Oh my god. My mom comes back home. And so this is us like, oh my god, we are dead. Like this is the end. Like we're finished. But so by whatever stroke of luck, she doesn't look behind because we're behind, like we're across the street. And so they drive off and then we like keep going. Get to the cinema. The whole time we can't even relax because we're like checking the time. We have to start going back home in time, all that stuff. And then my phone starts, I had a BlackBerry Bold. It gets really hot. And I can't remember whether it was at the, oh no, yeah, it was at the cinema. It just goes off.
Like it dies, like the battery dies.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, when I go home, I'll just let it cool down because BlackBerry is the overheat really quickly. Yeah. Let it cool down, let it charge, all that stuff. And I go home, let it cool down, let it charge, and then it doesn't come on. So I'm just like crying, like, God, why are you punishing me? Like I would have gone for the meeting, you know? Like this is my punishment for doing what I'm not supposed to do.
Precious went to parties at the hotel close to her house, had a secret boyfriend that her dad found out about. She completely denied it. As she's grown older and as she and her mother have moved out of Nigeria, she's become less likely to keep those secrets. For instance, she has two tattoos. Her mom has seen both.
She saw one of my tattoos, my first tattoo. I didn't even have a second tattoo by that time. And she was like, there is that tattoo. And then I just walked away. I was like, nah, I'm not having this conversation. And so she repeated herself. And I was like, yes. Any problem? And she was like, what does it mean? And she made the whole thing. Not really, to be honest. That's my mom. My mom is pretty chill. She always says it's like her kid's happiness is paramount. So it's like, okay, she would make a bit of a fuss. She's old. She had energy for my brother. Yeah, my brother is 8 years older than me, so she had energy for him. Now she doesn't have, like, she just saw it, made a bit of a speech, and then left it. The second tattoo, she literally just looked at me and just like shook her head and walked away. She didn't say anything. So
her mom knows she smokes and that she's not a Christian.
If she do, like, my mom had literally come into my room. I was sleeping, because I smoke.
Yeah.
She saw my J on my table, and she picked it up and looked at me and was like, "What's this?" And then in my haze of sleep, I just said some rubbish, and she dropped it and left. So me, I woke up and I was like, "Was that a dream?" And she never mentioned it, like until much later, like months later, before she mentioned it, and I was like, wait, so that was real? Like, what? So yeah, she would never bring it up unless it's absolutely necessary. She doesn't like confronting things.
Yeah.
So I'm calm. Me, I'm not, because even like another, I'm not a Christian. She's a Christian. We've not had that conversation. But she doesn't make me go to church. So it's like, she pretty much keeps herself to herself and keeps to myself.
But there's one secret left.
That's the most important thing. She doesn't know I'm gay.
Her sexual identity is the last secret she has to tell her mom. She's working towards being able to.
Okay.
How do you think your mom will react?
I don't think she's going to. The only reason why she would even react is because of her sisters. What her sisters will say. But she cares about what they will say. Personally, she doesn't really give. Like, she doesn't care. But she always says, like, her children's happiness is what is most important to her. Yeah. As long as you're happy, that's all that matters to her.
How about your dad?
Oh, my dad is going to be so mad. I can probably stop talking to him. I never thought of about till now because I don't intend to. He's not part of my show of thought. So I wasn't even planning to tell him.
Yeah.
Like, I guess if he finds out, like.
Precious has a feeling that her mom knows she's gay, but she also knows her mom, and she knows the woman does not like confrontation. She's not going to do it until she absolutely must. In the meantime, Precious is not too pressed to break the silence. She knows it will eventually happen, but till then. After the break, a very difficult story to tell. Welcome back. This is Act 3. Act 3, what do you say after that? We actually had a difficult time with this story, like deciding how to tell it or what to tell about it. So instead of pretending to know what to do, producer Mo Isu jumped on a call with the production team for this episode and we tried to figure it out together.
Okay, so before we go on, quickly let's do introductions. So basically, I'll just say my name and what I do, and you do the same. Mo Isu, producer.
My name is Isi.
Sandra Eku, associate producer.
I am Sunika Edidada, associate producer.
So what has happened is that I have a story for a segment of this episode, and instead of getting like a voiceover person to read that, like read what that story is, like read what the message is, I want you to read it so I can get your reaction and we can have a small discussion about the issue.
All right.
You're on the document?
Yes, I am.
All right, so read it. You're not narrating, just read the message.
Hello, just wanted to throw in something that happened to me
as a kid that I've never told anyone.
I was raped by my brother when I was 5.
I can't even really call it rape because he was only 7 at the time, and I later discovered he had been sexually molested by our neighbor's maid as well. I definitely do carry a lot of resentment towards him till this day, but my mom thinks it's because I'm jealous of how close they are. Anyway, I've moved out of my childhood home now and I'm living my best life free from the pain and constant triggers I used to face at home.
Please keep me anonymous.
Okay, after you say something like this, after you hear somebody say something like this, where do we go from there?
First of all, this is very fucked up. This is extremely very fucked up, and I can't begin to unpack the pain that. I can't even fathom having to live in the same house as someone who assaulted you, who raped you. Like it doesn't matter. Like, even though he was a child, even though he had been assaulted himself, it doesn't matter. It's fucked up. And
I mean, she was 5 and he was 7.
Yeah.
And he was also molested.
Yeah.
I don't know, because, like, I'm thinking, is a 7-year-old boy, but, like, she was just a 5-year-old girl. Like, I'm not defending him, but did he know what he was doing? Where is the maid is my question, because this is all her fault.
It's just, I don't know what you... Do you try to say something to like people? I got other people that have similar experiences. Do you try to say something to them? Do you try to be like a voice of like, you're not alone? Or do you try to tell them to look for help? Or do you try to comfort them? Like, what kind of comforting do you even give them? I guess it's a completely different from, like, I think the two other stories in this episode, people are keeping secrets because of like things within their control and like things they want to keep for their parents because they don't think it's productive for their parents to know those things. Or like if it's like areas of their lives where like all their parents won't be happy with it or whatever. But like this one is completely different. This is like a traumatic experience.
But like the thing is, it's not an outside incident, it's an inside incident. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. So first of all, yeah, you have to tackle the source. Find out, obviously,
the neighbor's maid.
Is the brother. Talk to the brother and find out what happened, why this is happening. Then address the neighbor's maid and... Right? I don't know. He's trying to think of ways in which you can be constructive in certain situations, in which the steps to take actually aids the situation, not that it worsens it or it just, you know, makes it hostile for no reason. But I think there are some things that, God forbid, you really just don't know how you're going to react until you're actually in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you try to pick, not necessarily pick a side, if people will have, or like there might be a problem if you try to be sympathetic on all sides. But like, I can't help it because the boy was 7. So like, I'm thinking, you know, 7, there could be a lot of like, he wasn't aware of what he was doing. But then 7 is still an age where kids like are still also kind of aware of what they're doing. And see, the only thing I can say is that like I understand why she needs to move out. Like, she probably still has not gotten over it, because the way it is now, like she probably has not, okay, not probably, she definitely has not told anybody about it, so the thing is still like in her own mind, to understand. There has not been discussing, there has been no apologies, there has been no anything. So it's hard to say she move on from that. But then if you try to, I think it's just lead people to come to their own conclusions, honestly. I don't know.
I actually feel like, I don't like confrontation, but I actually feel she needs to talk to her brother about this. It wasn't indicated here if they ever had a conversation about it, because like I said, the things that happen when you're a child that you later grow up and then realize that that was some fucked up shit you went through. Yeah. And I'm not saying him apologizing is going to absolve him of his wrongdoing. But again, like I said, like she's trying to say here, he was a child himself. And it's not going to absolve him. It's not going to make what he did okay. But it might help her heal. Yeah, it might actually help her heal, like talking to him about it, getting an apology from him. Honestly, this is just messed up. Like, this is fucked up. I don't know what else to say apart from that.
Yeah, I mean, that's been like that's been the general consensus of like reactions. Because I've talked to everybody involved in production for this episode. Because I don't know what to say. I'm not even going to try writing a script around it. So I just figured I'll jump on the call with everybody and
so we can all not know what to say together.
Messed up. I hope she's in therapy, to be honest. Like, I'm the biggest advocate of therapy, for therapy. I talk about therapy a lot every single time. Like, you guys need therapy. Even after relationships, people mock this a little bit, but I feel like people need to normalize going to therapy for the most random things, and this is not a random thing. Like, I really hope she's in a good place now. I really hope she can actually. I really hope she's happy.
This is where we're going to end today's episode. I was your host, Bisi Adedun. Moisu produced this episode with help from Ayotunde Kayodedada and Sandra Ogu. We had voiceover help from Sheyi Olubaba. The music you heard at the beginning of this episode was by Donna Loves Music. The music you hear now and through the episode is by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to our supporters on Patreon for helping us make this show. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Pod of Bubbles. We will be back next week. Till then, this podcast was recorded inside a bubble.